Does Huey have some fireworks and some horns and great applause for a bonus episode? We got a bonus episode again.
It's like that, like when you send a text to somebody when it says congratulations, yes, and the fireworks or the balloons or happy birthday.
Yes.
I'll talk to, I don't know if we have any money in the budget, but we'll try to figure something out.
Although the bonus episodes are getting to be so regular that they're just another Tuesday.
There's never such a thing as just another Tuesday. It's bonus Tuesday.
Kelly Rudy from Hockey Night in Canada and covers the Calgary Flames for Sportsnet is going to join us. And just a fun conversation regarding his path. I think people would be surprised. His time in the booth wasn't where he started. It was an add-on. Nope. And how he felt about that. But also, he's been on such a journey to make the world better, too.
Well, you know, he's... And I don't know if we'll get into it, but even in his playing time, he went through some struggles that he got help from the great Tony Robbins when he was in Los Angeles, thinking positive and working positive. But it has been something that Kelly's been dealing with for 5 or 6 years now and has been very open about. So it's something I think we owe to him to talk about, because I think he's happy when he does it. But at the same time, Darren, we have to talk about the Calgary Flames, who have become a real story in the National Hockey League.
They're the Western Conference's version of the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, that's fair.
Expectations at the start of the year.
You're right. No, that's a good point. That's a really good point. And with games in hand... and then this last road trip that started off so poorly, they had a 4-game trip that started in Toronto. They lost and were embarrassed, quite frankly. Their special teams were so bad. But then they went and won New York. That's all they did, was they won in New Jersey, won in New York, and won on the island. And it's put them back in the storyline for a wild card spot.
There's so many teams right now in the National Hockey League whose management and coaches and hockey operations department are looking at the Habs and the Flames going, how are they able to do it? And we have this plan and better players, and we haven't been able to meet the challenge.
So the Jack Adams Trophy goes to the coach of the year, which is usually a curse these days. Just ask Rick Tocchet. Mm-hmm. And we all talk about Scott Arneil in Winnipeg and Spencer Carberry in Washington, maybe your pal Dean Evason in Columbus. But Ryan Huska has done a magnificent job in Calgary. Ryan Huska has and I would argue maybe he's done more with less. And people in Calgary are going to say, and the players are going to be mad at me, but he's done a magnificent job with what everybody expected to come out of that hockey club when we started the season in October.
Yeah. Look back at the predictions.
Yeah.
When camps opened.
Right.
And then they can be mad at you if they were predicting this.
Yeah.
If they were predicting this, they can be mad at you.
Yes.
But nobody's predicting this.
I don't think so either. So.
I got to take on the Jack Adams Award. I'll save it for after Kelly, because he just turned on the light. Yeah. You're not going to like it, but I got to get it off my chest because you brought it up. But Kelly Rudy standing by as he joins 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon next. You know what we're going to start doing? Recording before the guest comes on, and then we get all the natural stuff. Because Roots comes on, and there's Kelly Rudy, and he wants to talk about the mask behind me. He's got a great mask that he wore.
Here's the problem. Every guest that comes on wants to talk about the masks behind you. Every guest.
Because masks are cool.
Oh, are those ever. Wayne Stevenson, I see that to your left.
Oh, my gosh.
John Garrett. Let's see. I have to have a picture of Darren. I have to see Darren again. I've lost him. So I need to see who else I recognize, which masks. Anyways, I just want to thank, before we get going, I want to thank you guys for postponing this by a couple of days. We're as... We were going to do it on Friday, but I was on Long Island and I did something really special. My lovely wife, Donna, was with me. And so we rented a car that afternoon. We went out to East Northport where we bought our first house and we went all in the neighborhood. It was really magical. So I appreciate postponing.
Well, you know what, Kelly, we suffered through Friday.
Who'd you have?
Spencer Carberry.
Oh my gosh. I think that would have been okay.
We did okay. We did okay. But so are the neighbors still there? Some people still are in the neighborhood?
No, I think everybody's gone. And I was too shy to knock on the door. I even got out of the car. Donna stayed in the car and I kind of walked around. I thought that might be a little bit uncomfortable. So I didn't go up to the door, but I wanted to, but they have done so many nice things to the house, so it looks way better than when we were there. So
how old were you? I would have been
1985, so I guess I would have been 24 when I bought the house.
Wow.
Yeah,
it was just a pop. Could you imagine a 24-year-old trying to buy a house now?
I think of that often with our kids and how difficult it is, and our kids in their 30s, and it is just incredibly difficult. And think about it often. In fact, Jessica, our oldest, and her husband Matt, and their two grandkids are living with us right now because they did sell their place, and they just closed on a house recently. So I think they take possession today, in fact. And so it's a busy household. It's chaotic right now.
Yeah. Well, I something tells me every time at the Harudi household is chaotic.
But fun.
Right?
why not?
Why not? Right? It's all good.
Spencer Carberry showed us a Game Use stick that he got from Wayne Gretzky. He's never met Wayne, but his dad him the stick, an old Titan that now sits in the corner of his office. Do you have one of the old Eastons from Wayne? Or
Hang on.
Really? I love this. We have to do more.
This is an official Wayne Gretzky stick. It's the Easton. This was from January 11th, 1994. This happened to be my 500th NHL game, which for a goaltender is a milestone. It's not 1,000 games. It's 500. And it's from Wayne. It says, to Kelly. It's a great pleasure to play with you in friendship, Wayne 99. And he signed it. So, very cool, right?
I have one of those too from Wayne.
Yeah.
To whom it may concern.
And you bought it at a flea market.
I didn't want him to write your name on it because it was going to diminish it.
What I did in the early 90s, and Kelly was actually part of this, in the early 90s, I would go around, and I hate asking for autographs, I would ask for autograph sticks, and they were all autographed to Jake, who's my son.
Yeah.
And at the point, that time, like Jake was a year and a half. So, and I had planned at some point in his life to present him with about 50
amazing
autographed hockey sticks, and they're still wrapped up in plastic out here and are behind the furnace, you know, there. And one day I'll give them to them.
So, Darren, the moral of this story is that John didn't think much of my career because he never asked me for a stick.
Oh, yeah.
What's that
true.
All about?
You have one. There's a Kelly Rudy to Jake in the
okay.
Over there in the corner.
I was just testing you, my friend.
No, it was there. You weren't Evgeny Nabokov, because that was Jake's favorite goaltender.
Good reason.
So
you guys should have him on your podcast. He's amazing. Oh my gosh, he's amazing. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
When I was in San Jose a couple years ago now for Patrick Marleau's celebration, his jersey retirement, he and Nabokov and I got along amazingly well, and he reminded me about it was my last year in the league and his first training camp, and so how we had shared some time together back then. So it was really cool to catch up.
Well, at our house, we have two pictures of Jake Shannon at age 11.
Yeah.
Standing beside Evgeny Nabokov. And Nabokov's 6'1" and Jake Shannon's 5'1".
Okay.
And then the All-Star game in Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
Jake Shannon and Evgeny Nabokov, and Jake Shannon 6'2" and Evgeny Nabokov 6'1".
I love that. Holy. Yeah,
so that's as close as we got to sharing.
Is there any other things you want to say to Kelly about other people before we can talk to Kelly about him?
I'm a little embarrassed because Kelly's not from Brandon. Because usually all we do is talk about from people from Brandon.
That is true.
Which is where Darren is from.
Oh,
so,
I know.
So,
oh,
for sure. Everybody knows Darren's from Brandon. I mean, crazy. So let's talk about the hockey team you've been covering.
Yeah.
Well, win in New Jersey, win at the Garden, win on Long Island. You were there for all three. It must have been special.
It was special, and considering that road trip started poorly, right? The first game was in Toronto, and they got absolutely smoked.
Waxed.
And what I have learned this season about the Flames, and it's not just this four-game road trip, but throughout the year, whenever they've had little stretches where maybe stumble a little bit, and you kind of go, oh, okay, well, maybe this is kind of where they run out of gas. They always do something special to get themselves back into it. By the way, those three wins, all of them were come from behind. In every single game, they're behind in those games. And this is a team that they somehow find it within themselves, and they're a really close team. There's no doubt about that. I'm around them enough to see in the dressing room, and they really love and care for each other. It's really inspiring, really, to see that.
Teams around the league that are expected to take a step and they have trouble. I think it's Seattle or Buffalo or Detroit. And then you've got a club like Calgary where we weren't expecting this. What's allowed them to overcome being counted out at the start of the season?
Well, a couple of things, and I know you guys have heard this many times. Their goaltending has been tremendous. Mm-hmm. I know Dan Vladar doesn't get the credit that he deserves. Dustin Wolf has really taken the number one job. But having said that, he's been really supportive of Dan. Dan's done a really nice job. Number one thing that I don't think people talk enough about is Ryan Huska and his staff, the job he's done. Like, and I know you guys watch, but he mixes up his lines just at the right time, just when it looks as though maybe a line's getting a little stale or something. He mixes them up. He's not afraid to make lineup changes. He pushes all the right buttons at the right time. He looks like he's kind of like a really mild-mannered guy, and for the most part he is, and he treats us incredibly well with great respect and everything, but he can go after the guys and he'll get on them if he doesn't think that they're doing what they need to do. And their style of play, he's really adamant that they have to play a particular way, and that is, of course, like most good teams, good on the forecheck. But what he talks about often is below the goal line in the offensive zone, how they have to retrieve pucks there, play down low a lot, and use their speed through the neutral zone. So they've done a lot of really good things. And I'm one of the first guys to admit I didn't see this coming. I didn't see them having this kind of season. But, boy, it is one of the better buy-ins I've ever seen from a team.
You know, the word I was going to use was tenacious.
Yes.
And Ryan is far from tenacious.
He doesn't look that way, right?
Like, right. Yeah. No. I've known Ryan since he was a coach in Kelowna.
Yeah.
And he's such a good, polite person. And you never are sure how that. And every other coach in the league is going to be mad at me for saying this. Like that's not supposed to be in a coach's DNA.
To be nice. To be nice to people.
Well, I know. You know, there's always supposed to be that. You know, what was the story we were talking about with Pete DeBoer? Oh, Paul Maurice, when they'd leave a building, walk 5 feet behind him because he was mad, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I saw that after game 6 in Edmonton in the final.
Right.
Holy, he was mad leaving the rink. I was like, okay, I'm going to stay away from this guy. But, you know, Ryan's interesting, Ryan Huska, because I'm with the team part of the time, but not always. Our good friend Greg Millen fills in for me when I'm away. And every single time I show up again at the arena, Ryan will stop maybe mid-sentence and go, oh, hey, Kelly.
Monday night, after that 6-2 debacle at Scotiabank Arena in Toronto, I mean, I walk down after the game, Ryan does his scrum.
Yeah.
And as he's walking away, I yell his name and he turns around. Hey, when are you coming back? Are you coming back to Kelowna in the summer?
Oh, I mean, wow. Right.
Just Ryan Huska to me.
Yeah.
And that's why you never, well, I can't ever imagine Ryan reaming a team out.
Well, he does. He can. And I've heard from the players and I've watched that series that the Flames have on the website, and he can get after them. And you have to. I mean, I remember many years ago, I think it was Joel Quenneville. He was asking me about one of the coaches that I had. And he said something like, does he ever get a burr on, though? Because can he ever stay mad at the guys? And I was like, not really. And he goes, oh, that's not good. You gotta get mad at the guys sometimes, and they have to know that you're angry with them.
That was Al Arbor, though. Al Arbor
could.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah. But Al knew the psychology of an athlete, I think, better or sooner than most coaches back then, especially. Al definitely could get after you, but at the end of every single day, when I put my head on my pillow, I've always said this about Al, I always knew he cared about me. And even if he is mad at me, he cared about me.
So is this the style that Ryan is as a coach, do we believe, or is he coaching the team that he has?
I think it's a combination for sure. Yeah. I think he would do some things a little bit differently if he had a more skilled team, but he doesn't. And so the way they play is how he thinks that they have to play together as a unit to have any kind of success, or even stay in games, really, because they don't score many. So they've got to stay in as many games as they can.
The other thing about this team is there's two guys that have really impressed me.
Yeah.
One is Nas. Because yeah. He's grown up.
Yeah, he has.
He's grown up.
Yeah.
We saw it all here in Toronto. He was starting to grow up in Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in Toronto, we saw that he would get off the rails.
You know, he's an awesome guy. I've gotten to know him a little bit. And he's a driver. He's not only does he drive that line, he drives this team. He is emotionally invested every single game. On occasion, does he take a penalty that you don't like? Yeah. But that I would rather have a guy like that because he cares so much and he will do everything to drag his team into a game. And it's every game almost. In the 3 years he's been here, I can maybe count 10 or 15 games only where I thought maybe he wasn't at his best tonight. Now, he may not get some points, but he brings it every single night. He's one of the guys I'm most impressed with. Another guy, I don't know who the second guy was, John, but I'm going to say Mackenzie Weegar is a guy that I didn't know he was this talented. He's amazing. He's turning like Kadri, he's turning into a leader. He's really grown. His voice is important now, and he seems to take charge at the right time.
My guy was going to be Kevin Ball.
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, same. Holy.
And like on the island, that game against the Islanders,
yeah.
I'm going, holy smokes. And
oh, yeah.
Then you realize he was part of the Markstrom deal.
Yeah.
And how valuable he has become for this hockey club for a guy his size.
Yeah.
Massive man.
And skates well, great stick. I didn't realize somebody in the organization, I can't remember who I was talking to or I heard an interview with on this road trip, and they said the thing about Ball that they didn't expect is that he's got more offensive upside than they had expected. And I would say the same, because when I was watching him in New Jersey and covering him, I thought he was a good player, but I didn't know what his ceiling could be. And now for me, I'm looking, it's unlimited. I'm really going to expect more out of him next year and even the year after, because I think he's capable of it.
Where has Mackenzie been able to take his game that you didn't see or weren't aware of?
He's turned into a dynamic player with the puck. I always thought he was really good at the first pass. I thought he had some capabilities maybe on the power play, but it's almost every shift that he'll do something. There's one play that he does, but I'm not going to reveal it because I've talked to him about this and that would be revealing trade secrets. But if you watch him close enough, watch him every game and you'll figure out what I'm talking about. He's got this one tricky play that he fools every single forechecker coming at him. And it's turned out to be, in my opinion, his signature move that I think a lot of young defensemen should watch. And it's really, it's beautiful in how he executes it.
Are you going to show it on the next Sportsnet broadcast?
I don't think, because it was the conversation he and I had, and I think it would be just sharing too much.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's great because now I've got something to do.
Yeah, now if you watch, you'll figure it out. It's not something that hasn't been a part of the game before. He's just really good at it.
Well, that's more than I can say for me or Darren.
You're just mad because Kelly won't tell you.
Yeah. If I was his producer, I'd make him.
I know, but I couldn't. I had that conversation, just he and I. And I don't know if anybody's talked to him about that, what I chatted to him about. So I don't know if
that's good. Hey, listen, part of doing the job that you have to do is to maintain player and coach trust.
That's right.
It's a big part of it, you know, and where to draw the line.
That's right. Ryan Huska has told us, and not just me, but Ryan Leslie and John Abbott and a couple others, the radio team, that about certain players, but he said you can't share it. And that's right. Perfectly fair. I totally get it, and I never would.
Now I'm going to watch the Mackenzie Weegar and be able to, I can look at it and go, hey, I learned this. Look at this, but I won't mention your name. Okay.
But yes, might there you look go.
Because nobody's listening to this. That's right. Actually, that's one of our problems. Nobody's listening to this. So.
I'll look like a genius. It'd be awesome. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more with Kelly Rudy and 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Can you jump like Dustin Wolf?
No, that's the primary reason. Like, I played a lot of sports as a kid. That is the reason I never played basketball. I think I could jump about an inch off the ground and that's it.
So I saw him after. So he got pulled in Toronto.
Yeah.
And after the game, the Flames fitness guy, I don't know who he is. Sorry. Yeah. Should know. I should do my research.
Yeah.
Dustin's on the bike after the game.
Yeah.
And not only that, his thighs are massive.
Yeah.
Massive. And for a guy his size, that tells you why he can jump that high, right?
Oh, for sure. He's very athletic. And, well, Darren is a former goalie or a goalie.
Darren's not athletic.
you would watch him and know, okay, if you watch him, you can figure out pretty quickly why he's successful, and that's because he can read a play. And if your technique is strong and you can read a play, you can last in this league, and he's going to last.
He looks like he knows where the shot's going before the guys deliver it. Like he does some unique save selections
that
only work if you can read a release.
That's right. And by that, I think I know what you're talking about. He stays on his feet longer than most guys.
Yeah.
And that's why there was a really cool save he had versus the Devils. I can't remember. Kovacevic, maybe. And it was through a screen, and Dustin Wolf was looking to his right. The player was planted right in front of him, and Wolf made a left glove hand save up top. That was just remarkable. And so he's able to do some of those things that others can't. He beats the pass often. I think I can only recall one or two times in this season where he didn't react properly to a cross-crease pass and he was beat. So he's the real deal. And it's interesting. So before the season started, I did a Q&A with Mike Vernon and Grant Fuhr here in Calgary in front of about 1,000 people. And so it was a really cool event for me to able to host.
Let me guess, Mike
that.
Vernon spoke more.
Hey, Grant has come out of his shell.
Oh, no. Grant's a TV broadcaster now.
Oh, I know, for Coachella. And he's doing great. So I was asking him about Grant, about Dustin Wolf, and he was saying how he's been following quite a few years or a couple of years in the AHL. And he said, I guarantee you, I've watched him a lot, he is going to be a star in the National Hockey League. That's coming from Grant. That's telling you a lot.
So his just hockey IQ? We don't talk about goaltenders in that regard a lot. but yeah. he looks like he's got that.
And he studies the game. You can definitely see that. Like, he understands what everybody else's job is on the ice. So he's not just that singular guy that, hey, I've got to worry about what I do, and I don't really pay attention to the third line and what they're trying to accomplish or how the fourth line is going about their work. So it's really cool to talk to him. He's really relaxed, by the way, which I thought, I don't know why I thought this, I thought he'd be really wired in the morning getting ready, because he's had to fight through all these obstacles and people telling him he's not going to be good enough, and he is really relaxed in the morning. He's fun to be around. So is Dan Vladar. I think that's one of the reasons why they work well together.
So yeah, I just want both of you guys mentioned something that I'm not sure about, is you talked about being able to read the puck or read the shot.
Yeah.
Is it more difficult now with the types of sticks?
Oh, I would think. I definitely would think it would be more difficult. I think players have never been more talented. Players have never had the shots have never been harder or more accurate. And I'll give you an example why I think it's more accurate. How many goals would go in? I know the goaltenders, trust me, I know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and early 90s, we're playing a different way, and we stood up on our feet more often. But how many high short side goals would have gone in? Rarely.
Rarely.
Yeah. I would have maybe given up 3 or 4 or 5 in a season. The players with their accuracy now, even with the different style of goaltender, there's hundreds of high short side goals going in. And it's only going to get more so because of the accuracy of these guys. These guys only need the size of the puck now. And it used to be where they needed a pretty good area to put it in there.
Well, the sticks allow you to be so consistent in where you're going to put it.
Yeah. And it's everybody. It's not just the top six guys. It's everybody. Like, the fourth line right winger can do it the exact same as the first line guy. It's really remarkable, especially when you watch in practice and stuff, or even warm up. Just watch the skill, what they do skill-wise. It's sometimes you're blown away by how talented they are.
Roots, the other part is, back in the 80s, 90s, you didn't want people shooting near your head. Now they go into that RVH, and it's like they're almost goading them in. Nobody wants the puck going near their ears back in 2 decades ago.
No, that would not hurt. A chance. You'd
take that away.
Well, I know. Well, and equipment was different. Like, we were scared. I remember, you guys might chuckle at this. So you guys remember Rudy Pillis and the success he had as a coach with Chicago, and then he was a scout and manager and all that. But in my second year junior, so this would have been 1979-80, my coach, we were playing in Billings that day, Medicine Hat, and Patty Janelle, my coach, introduced me to Rudy Pillis after the game. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what an honor. And we're just chatting, and then Rudy said something about, I like a lot of your game, Kelly, but sometimes you look scared of the puck. And I just blurted it out. I wasn't even thinking. I go, yeah, it hurts. Like, back in 1980, what do you expect? Yeah. I had lousy equipment, and yeah, frick, it hurt. I'll tell you.
Say, let's talk about you for a bit. So you didn't do Saturday on the panel because you were with the Flames on this trip.
Yeah, yeah.
Which do you like more?
Oh, man. I was wondering if you're going to ask me, because I've been asked that, and I think,
which
and
I'm means not it's a bad question, which means it's a bad question. Then.
No. Right. I'm not dodging this question, John, but I think I like them equally, but for different reasons. Because if people didn't know about being a broadcaster, being a studio guy and a color analyst, although you're talking about hockey, they're two entirely different jobs, and your brain has to think differently. And so I guess I'll answer this way. If I have a good game as a color analyst for the Flames, when I get in my truck after the game at the Saddle Dome, I'm really, really, really proud, because it doesn't come as naturally for me. It's not as easy a job for me. And so when I think I have a really good night, I'm extremely proud. And if a studio work, I kind of I hope this doesn't sound arrogant. I kind of hope that I kind of feel like I should be good at it or better at it because I've been doing it a lot longer and more frequently. But so I'm really proud of the work I do with the Flames because it's a real challenge for me.
What's the biggest challenge to it?
Seeing everything differently, seeing it quickly, working with the producer, as you know that, John, about pushing your talk back down and being clear and concise and have something ready quickly in case there's a quick whistle. And I learned that from you. I learned that from Shirelli Najak. Always have something, one or two plays ready. So if there's a quick whistle, you can quickly go show your plays. So memory, I used to try and write down what my replays would be, but then that just bogs you down. And then you can't look past that, right? It's a disaster. And so then you have to, sometimes we'll show five clips in a sequence. And so you have to try and remember everything that's coming in an order. And, we have good producers, so they guide you along if you're stumbling a little bit. But there's a lot of challenges to it, John. Coming up with storylines, it's an ever-changing game. It's not the game. For instance, I was thinking about this. I was thinking how lucky I was, John, when you first hired me back in 1998 to do studio work on the side on some of those rare Monday and Thursday games, you'd have me doing color. Mm-hmm. And I kept all those notes. And so when I got this job back, I counted. I did 30 games exactly. As a color,
did you really?
Yeah, color analyst those first two or three years. And it really helped me get back into doing this role. And yeah, it's a real challenge for me. The mind, like I said, the mind has to think differently on a studio show and in the broadcast booth.
I would assume it is more physically and mentally challenging in the booth, and therefore at the end of the game, you're more tired.
I would say no, only because maybe when the adrenaline wears off, I'll be more tired. But I'm jacked after a game. I'm really jacked.
It's almost like playing, right?
It is, and because it's live, right? So,
when you're in the booth, your shift is 60 minutes long, not 20 minutes skater or 60, and it's closer to being a goalie again.
It's very close to being a goalie because you make mistakes, right? And so, as a goalie, I made lots of mistakes, but I had to get over it. You have to get over it instantaneously, and you better do that in the booth as well because you're going to make mistakes, and you can't let that rattle you because if it does, you'll be ruined for the entire game.
What was your first reaction when they asked you to go to the booth on a full-time basis?
Well, this goes back to my last 2 years at CBC, and my honest answer would have been, or will be, I was angry and disappointed because that's not what I had in mind for my career going forward. But I learned to love it. And Brian Spear also went out west. He was my producer, and I've loved Brian, working with Brian forever. He does Saturday nights. He does all playoff games for us. Both you guys, I know Brian really well. Mm-hmm. And I had a chance to work with Rick Ball. And so that was a great opportunity for me because he's a really great broadcaster. So he allowed me to sort of settle into that role again and sort of learn it again. Nice. And then when Sportsnet got the rights, and then they came to me in January of 2014, I guess, just before the Winter Olympics in Sochi, and they offered me this position. They wanted me to do studio work in Toronto, but they also wanted to know if I'd do Flames. And so I jumped at that opportunity. And so I've really grown to love them both. But I honestly didn't like it when it was first presented to me.
Not a bad
job. Good on you.
What's that?
I was going to say, good on you to be able to have that feeling, but still make it work and manage it.
Yeah, well, I had 2 years left in my deal, so I better learn to manage it.
Well, but you're a fighter when it comes to playing the game. You might as well fight when you're being a broadcaster. I mean,
that's exactly right.
Make the come up with the challenge.
That's exactly right. That's I battled my entire career to stay in the National Hockey League, and I still battle in this because I enjoy it, and that's just my personality.
Hey, I got to ask you too. You've been also very, very transparent and open about your challenges with mental health.
Yeah.
And gosh, it's got to be a month ago. I was sitting at home watching an afternoon game on Saturday, and you tweeted out, "I'm having a tough day." But I talked to Donna and I'm fighting through it.
Yeah. And it was a big win for me that day, John.
And there's two questions, because we've talked about this before on different shows. Yeah. Why are you so public about it? And I guess the second one is how are you doing?
I'll answer the second question first. I'm doing great. I have my moments. I always will, I guess. The reason why I'm open is because Caitlin, our youngest daughter, shared in the spring of 2013 her challenges and what her life has been like. And I thought she was the bravest person on the planet to do that. And then when I started having my problems in 2019, and they were related to an issue I had, which I didn't know at the time, going back to 1992-93, my issues came back in 2019, and I thought if Caitlin can share, I can share. And what I found, John and Darren, the reason why I shared on social media is because it's not a community that I've created, but it's a community I'm a part of. People comment, and I find it really heartwarming that all of us share what we're going through. I get so many kind messages. We just share, and it's really, I think, cool in today's world that we can share what we're going through and we're not ashamed. And it doesn't matter if you're a 64-year-old guy like me or a 22-year-old person that might be going through something or have had something for 10 years. If we all share, we can get through it and know we're not alone. By the way, I will say this though, if you are going through something, please try and get the help that you need, because it's too lonely. It's too hard to do it by yourself. But if you're not able to share, you don't have to. There's no way in the world sharing is for everybody. I find it helps me, but you don't have to if you can't.
I love the fact that it makes reaching out to get help a lot easier, knowing that somebody else is going through it. That's the real. The support and the interaction is awesome. It makes us feel better, but just getting more people to seek and get the help that they need.
Mm-hmm. So when I was going, I haven't gone in a little bit and I should, when I was seeing the person helping me with my mental health, I went weekly for months and months and months. And it was the greatest thing. I felt so much better. And I knew I needed to, but they told me, they shared a line with me that I had never considered in my life ever, ever, ever. I carry this little laminated index card everywhere I go with me in case I'm having a hard time. And this one is related to work. And it's the last line on that index card says, "You deserve this success." I had never considered that in my life. I don't think a lot of people do. I think we just go through life powering through every day, and we don't stop to consider that, hey, maybe I've worked hard and maybe I do deserve this success. We don't ever pat ourselves on the back, or not often enough. And so that line helps me remember that.
Would you have been a better athlete had you had some of these skills and resources?
Yes and no. The reason I made the National Hockey League is because of the way I am, because I powered through and I was hard on myself and I was sometimes unforgiving. But if I were to look back now, yes, I would have been better because I wouldn't have been so hard on myself. I would have been able to move beyond a game quicker. I'll give you another story. This is when I finally recognized as a player that I was too hard on myself. So I was playing for the Islanders still. We had made a trade for Richie Crom and Steve Conroy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. And And so we're on a, we played at home. I'm going to just make this up on a Tuesday. Wednesday, we're going to be playing in New Jersey. So Tuesday at home, I wasn't very good. And so I get on the bus after, go to Jersey, and I'm sitting there and I am furious with myself. I am just beating myself up over and over and over, relentless. And Steve Conrad gets on, sits on the bus about two seats in front of me, reaches into his day bag, pulls out a book and starts reading. And I'm thinking, you jerk, why aren't you as mad as I am? First time ever in my life, my brain clicked and goes, I wish that was me. You know, just get beyond it. Like, why beat yourself up all the time? And I still do that broadcasting, but I'm way better than I ever used to be. I'll give you one more. I'm storytelling now.
So, love this.
A couple of years ago when I was really struggling mentally, I had to do the post-game hit with Rick Ball for Sports Central, and I was awful. I just booted around awful, and I can't remember who the producer was, and they said something like, you want to do that again? I said, nope. I need that to go to air. So I needed mistakes to go to air so I'd learn to be okay with it and stop beating yourself up. It's okay, right? It's just, you're going to make mistakes. It's television. It's live television most of the time. You're making mistakes, so get over it.
So the other part of this question then becomes is how do people on the outside help? Because that first question is a difficult one to ask.
Yeah, it's a very difficult one. I think when you're worried about somebody, ask them. They may or may not tell you, but you can pretty much tell how somebody's doing by their eyes. Their eyes tell you, and you can just, you can tell. And I like to think that I ask people how they're doing if it's concerning to me. People with mental health, though, they may lie because they're scared. They don't want to share, but you can just reach out, and maybe even if they don't share, maybe send them a text if you know them well enough. And I am concerned about you. Are you okay?
Yeah.
That's beautiful. My time in Canada Sportsnet, I was way too intense. And I always call it a wasted period of my career. Mm-hmm. I was at the highest level, but I never enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Because I was too focused on being perfect. And now I've turned a corner and I love everything I do. And if I have a bad night, I have a bad night, but still care, but I turn the page, and I really wish I could go back and do it again and enjoy that process and those moments.
That I relate. I can understand that. And that's still a work in progress for me, where I can just, enjoy it a little bit more. Like, I get so worked up for Saturday nights, especially the pregame show. That's the one that really gives me my problems. And if I can get through the pregame show, then I'm usually going to have a pretty good night, in the sense that it won't bother me to do the rest. But the pregame show gives me grief for sure.
Isn't that amazing? Because we all look at you and think, you're a former athlete, goaltender, professional player. You're so comfortable on camera. Mm. We don't see any of that, the torture that you do put yourself through.
Yeah, I've watched myself recently and over the years, last few years, about what it looks like, knowing what I'm feeling. And somehow I'm able to get through it without looking too bad. But I always, as John, I always call Donna, and she's a great help for me. Sometimes I call her, 10 times in a day if I'm having a really tough day, maybe 30 times if I'm having a horrible day. And other times I'll maybe two or three and I'm good. So I just never know day to day, but I do understand this is a part of me, and I am working to get way better.
So I'm going to ask the question how it applies to business. You are now, a month from now, Kelly, you're going to be on the air for 50 straight nights.
Yeah.
How do you manage both of those in that situation?
Yeah. He goes and takes pictures of food.
Well, <I'm> not... yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. That's why John doesn't follow me anymore.
That's why I stopped following him. I said, Kelly, I don't give a shit.
I love it.
A steak and a glass of red wine.
Right?
By the way, he was out there having dinner. He didn't invite me to go with him. That's the other half of the problem.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny. I'm preparing for it. For some reason, I can get in a rhythm there, and it doesn't give me the same sort of feeling. Mm-hmm. And that's all it is. I just have to remind myself it's just a feeling. It's not real, but it feels real. But once I get more in a rhythm and a groove, then it seems to really lessen, and it doesn't have the same sort of feeling. I'd like to go for a walk almost every day of a broadcast and sort of clear my mind, and outside is a good place for me. And I do take some days off now, John. In the first round, I'm already planning with them. I'm going to take at least 2 days off in the first round, maybe more, and just help myself that way. And yeah, manage, get through.
Well, the great thing, Kelly, is, and I say this with utmost respect, you work with a really good group of loyal friends.
Yep, that's right.
And they help you through it.
They do.
They are really good people. Now, and I'm not just talking about the people on camera.
Oh,
I'm
know.
Talking that whole staff of people there that do it.
100%. I most likely couldn't have gone through all this and still been on the air without their help.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
And other than Ron, he's a jerk. But other than that,
but we've known that forever. So
haven't we? Haven't we? Come on.
I was going to go with Kevin.
No, but I've never worked with Kevin, so I don't know.
Well, you consider yourself lucky.
Thanks, Roots. This has been awesome, and it's been a really fun story to watch your team that you cover every night.
Yeah,
in the Calgary Flames. It's kind of encourages you that these things can happen throughout a season, that it's not all painted in the preseason.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thanks, guys.
More good days, right?
Pardon me?
More good days?
More good days. That's from Caitlin, of course. You know the story, John and Darren. And she came to us after 4 years of extensive therapy when she was 16 and said, "Mom, Dad, I'm having more good days than bad." Yeah. Can't be more profound than that.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. There's Kelly Rudy joining us on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Back with more after this. That felt real, the conversation. Oh, therapeutic wouldn't be too sappy of a word to use in that discussion. I just feel good sharing some of my thoughts with Kelly as he shares his, and you give us a feeling about what the world goes through.
Well, I mean, too often Kelly's been put in a spot too from the time he was a teenager, that he's been put on a pedestal. He's either been a National Hockey League goalie, or he's been a TV star. And lots of times, and you read it, you even read it now on social media, lots of times people don't realize what they're saying can be so overly critical or negative. These guys are people too. They have the same feelings that we have. And what I'm amazed at in so many ways and is that Kelly has been able to be so public about this. And it certainly sounds like being public has helped him fight through some of the demons that he's had.
I couldn't be that public.
No, neither could I. Darren, neither could I. It's whether it's in your DNA or whether it's what you've been taught at home. You know, lots of us.
I've gone through a lot of the similar things that he has, and people know, but not.
No, and some people, and as he said, even if you don't go public, it's still okay as long as you feel that you're trying to help yourself, and because there is no right perfect answer to any of this, is there? It's how you manage day to day.
I like the pictures of food. I miss.
No, seriously. He was traveling so much, and then you'd get the Thursday. It was like fish in Pittsburgh and steak in Toronto and Italian in Montreal. There's always the red wine was there too. Yes. So I just said, Kelly. Oh, and then he would ask, I'm on my way to San Jose. Any recommendations for dinner? Unfollow. I was done.
I liked it because I got to know restaurants.
Oh, no, I know. I was just, but I only follow 99 people. So,
moving a fluid 99, but it's capped at 99?
Capped. If I find somebody, oh, that's interesting. I'd like to follow them. I have to drop somebody.
You have to cut somebody.
Yep.
Is Ryan Huska part of that group?
Ryan Huska's on social media?
I don't know. I bet he does.
Yeah.
Everybody is.
By the way, you said you had a Jack Adams to take that we were supposed to hear about.
So you think Ryan Huska should be
considered? He should be considered.
You threw my pal Dino in Columbus.
Yes. Scott Arneal.
Scott Arneal, yeah.
And our new friend, Spencer Carberry.
All right, well.
Or as we call him, Spence.
Carbs.
No, typical athlete.
Three of those four teams have overachieved dramatically. Winnipeg was good last year.
Overachieved?
No, I think they're better than they were last year, but they're
not. Everybody in Winnipeg, that's Darren Millard saying you haven't achieved very much.
No, I thought they were a good team at the start, and they've followed through on promise. But the other Calgary's in the mix.
So you don't think Columbus Scott Arneal's done a good job as coach?
I think he's been great, but the other three have taken their teams from depths that we didn't expect or overcome challenges we didn't predict.
I don't know how you can go home to Manitoba in the summer.
Here's the issue: I would vote for Scott Arneal before my buddy Dino, who's from Brandon, Ryan Huska, or Spencer Carberry. Too often, the Jack Adams Award is for the most improved team, not the best coaching job. So, and you can look through it. I'm not going to name names, but you can look through it and go, okay, that team came from nowhere and did that. And the best team, the Stanley Cup champion coach, I know it's voted on before the playoffs, is ignored. How many times has John Cooper won the Jack Adams Award?
Never.
Thank you. Mic drop. See you later.
You
that's ridiculous that he hasn't won.
No, because he's measured not on the playoffs. He's measured on the level playing field of the 82-game regular season.
And he's done it a couple of times where he deserved the award.
Obviously, the professional or the NHL Broadcasters Association didn't agree with you.
Well, they got it wrong. They just love this beautiful story of a team that overcomes all the challenges and was counted out at the start of the season, and they make the playoffs.
So Marty St. Louis should be on the list then too.
Based on past history, he'll be a finalist. But based on my
we haven't mentioned John Cooper and Paul Maurice yet
Cassidy
or Bruce Cassidy. Homer, you're a homer.
He took a
what
team.
What about Jim Hiller?
Sure.
Holy
absolutely.
Smoke.
There's something to be said for being a great team and meeting expectations. And that group is ignored far too often. Wow. In the Jack Adams Award.
Holy smokes.
Just call it a most improved team.
Are you done?
I'm done now.
I don't like it when you get like this.
Well, it's just goofy.
Do you save all this anger for a bonus show? Is that what you did?
I didn't even know we were going to do this.
You promoted it before we talked to Kelly.
No, I didn't know I was going to go down that path today.
Oh.
But that's how much is festering in there. I got to talk more.
The
conversation with Roots today has shown me I got to.
There are pills for what you are going through there. You might even think of taking a few.
Blood pressure pills?
Rolaids.
I'm on them all. Cholesterol, blood pressure, indigestion. You have to say goodbye for me. I can't.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Darren Millard, this is John Shannon wishing you a fond adieu. And to quote the famous Edward R. Murrow, good night and good luck.
That's pretty good.